Hello everyone and welcome back, and it's awesome to be back. It's awesome to be anywhere. You just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, me, Richard Lannan. I'm even going to do that musically, Richard Lannan. And we're going to continue our journey. Now, if you're into my show, you know I like to help you create a roadmap to change your business, your career, or life. And we do this through having a chat with one person at a time, so we uncover people's lives, their business, their careers, their journey, their successes, to help you create the success that you deserve. And don't you deserve to be successful? I think everybody deserves to be successful, but let's face it, life does have its moments. And I have ways of saying that too. So as you know, I love to do this thing called Set for Success quotes. And so I always like to introduce it, hey, it's time for the Set for Success quote thing. But I often wonder how you guys think about that. But here we go. So many people spend their health gaining wealth, and then they spend their wealth to regain their health. Now, that's from A.J. Reverend Matiri, I think it's pronounced. I'm pretty sure. Now, he's a Canadian clergyman, and he's in the Canadian church official, and he's in the diocese chancellor of the Catholic Pastoral Center of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Saskatoon in the province of Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan, hey, let's a hand out to Saskatchewan. Always love being there. I've spent a lot of time in Saskatoon and Regina and various places, and driving through also. I found this quote from this reverend on the net. Now, if you know anything about me, I always like to look things up on the internet, and I type in success quotes or health quotes, etc. And this was one of the ones that came up, and then I sort of found a little bit of information about this man, and I just found it interesting overall. The whole idea around we spend our lives, our health, to gain wealth, and then we spend our wealth to actually regain our health. Think about that for a moment. I have been thinking about health lately as it relates to people's life successes, and it's a topic I often hit on and discuss with you guys. And one of the stories that I often find interesting is when somebody has a disease and the way that has impacted their business, their career, and their life, or their lives, so to speak, in a little bit broader context there. Often when I truly listen to someone's story, I think, boy, we take so much for granted. And think about it. How much stuff do you take for granted? You know, lots of things, right? We think we'll always have our faculties, our abilities, our facilities, and that we'll always be here and be willing or able to perform. And the reality is that's just not the case, right? Everybody goes down once in a while, and the question is, how do you come back up, right? We spend our time on things that may be important or may not be important, only to discover maybe what's truly important to us, especially when push comes to shove. What's truly important to us? Recently, I had the opportunity to make a new friend, and I love making new friends. And we had a great conversation. I started chatting with this guy, and I went, wow, what a great story. It's a story of service, of business, of a disease, of relationships, my favorite, of motorcycles and passion. Before I welcome my guests to join me, I want you to imagine just for a moment that you received some health news that would change your life forever. And that health news was Hep C. So we're going to talk a little bit about Hep C, but we're going to cover it off from a servitude perspective, from a business perspective, and then a life-changing experience. So today I'd like to welcome my guest, Brad Mastrovic. His life spans experiences from the military, a business owner, obviously a health survivor, motorcycle enthusiast with a real zeal for living their life. Brad, welcome to my show.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to get you chatting because I know you're a lot more chattier than this. So, Brad, I mean, we were talking just before we sort of kicked off the show and everything, a little bit about life. And we literally had like a little mini interview going on before we even turned the mics on.
We did indeed. And one of my best quotes is now gone to the wind.
Is now gone to the wind. Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever bring that one back. Brad, you know, I think we need to set the stage a little bit and just sort of talk about your life a little bit. Tell us a little about Brad, who you are and everything. Where are you from, Brad?
Well, I was born in Southern Ontario. Moved to Manitoba. I saw an ad from Inco Metals. There was a big two-page ad in the newspaper. And it just leaped at me. How do you not leap two pages of newspaper?
Yeah.
And it said, go to Thompson.
Oh, really?
Become a miner.
Oh, yeah.
And so I did.
Yeah, so you went up to Thompson, Manitoba and became a miner. How long did you do that for?
It was about 3 years.
About 3 years. Okay. Yeah. How old were you then?
Well, it was 1977.
And you admit that.
So take away 41 years.
Okay.
I was in my 20s.
You were in your 20s. So yeah. A young man trying to make his way in the world and everything from there.
Speaking of the theme of the show, getting that job was a step of success.
Oh, sure.
There was 300 guys in the room.
Yeah.
And I was being read, the interviewer was reading me out the door.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I knew it. So I jumped up off my chair, threw his office door open, and I said, pick anybody. Anybody at all. Give us a task, and I'll do it as good as or better.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy looked at me, signed the piece of paper, and said, March 11th, 8 a.m., not March 12th, March 11th.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And away we went.
And away you went, and you got your first job.
I got my first official
job. Now, have you been living in Manitoba all that time since then?
Or? Yes.
Yeah, so the Manitoba's been your home and everything.
Yes.
Yeah, so what are the kind of things that, well, first of all, I know that you're part of Winnipeg. I think you raised your family here. So when did you actually end up in Winnipeg?
1980.
Yeah.
Late 80.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of a strange entrance into Winnipeg. We decided that we were going to get this house down in the south end of the city. And it wasn't ready for us. So we had to park our trailer at Birdsell Park for 3 weeks, and it rained every day.
So that was a nice summer.
That was our introduction as a family to southern Manitoba. It took me many, many years to go back to Birdsell Park.
After that one, no doubt about
it. Oh, man.
Yeah, so that's actually a while ago. And basically, I understand, too, that you have some military service in your background.
Yeah, I did. Actually, that predated me going to INCO.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Right,
okay.
So it was a short-lived career, but I did cadets, militia, and then I went into the regular service. And so, it spanned several years, I guess, with the cadets and militia and my regular service, about 7 years.
About 7 years overall. And what did you do in the military? What was that? What are you willing to admit that you did in the military?
I was infantry.
Infantry, okay.
I became, as my colonel would put it, he'd say, we've invested a lot of money in you. At that time, I was the highest trained private.
Okay.
So I wasn't high in rank, but I was very well trained.
Yes.
Any course that came my way, they gave it to me.
Yeah.
It was just an incredible experience. If I wanted to get on a course, my commanding officer would make it happen.
Yeah, and that really makes a difference. I mean, that initiative. So I think what we'll do is we'll take a short break, and when we come back, I think we're going to talk a bit about taking initiative and your whole background with your business career and entrepreneurship and how the military sort of tied into that. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Brad Mastrovic. Brad, I love your last name. We had a whole conversation about that previously, about your last name. How you ever ended up with the first name Master is awesome. I just think that's such a great, strong name. I just want to say that. We were talking, I'm making you laugh, eh? We were talking about the military and your experience there. And I think by the sounds of it, with all that training, I think it sounds to me like it bridged the gap for your future, right? It sort of added in your approach to actually doing things. First of all, as a Canadian, I want to thank you for your service. I think as Canadians, a mind of servitude. I don't know why you joined the military, but maybe it was a sense of servitude. And joining the military and serving your country is an awesome thing. But I think you also, based on side conversations we had, you moved into being very much an entrepreneurial person, and you used the military experience to sort of bring you further with that.
I did. When they take you as a young man or young woman, and they step you, they take step one.
Yeah.
And they drill it over and over and over until you get step one. And then step two is introduced to step one. And you don't go on to step three until you know one and two.
Yeah.
And so that whole process of learning whether it's learning to march or learning to move as a unit or taking apart a weapon mm-hmm. and reassembling it. You know, whatever it happens to be in the military that you're doing, you can take that to every part of your life. You can say, okay, now how do I get about doing what I'm going to do? And you go, step one. Mm. What's step one? And don't go on to step two until you've got step one figured out. And that kind of has stuck with me and got me through some very difficult times.
Sure, sure.
Where did I go with that? My dad was in business. Some would argue he was not a very successful businessman. But in my eyes, he taught me a lot about dealing with people. I got to go with him, be with him, see things that went on when he was dealing with clients, with potential clients, or just people in general. One of the things my dad used to like to do was stop people at random and ask them where the yellow brick road was.
Oh, really?
You know, like, could you tell me where the yellow brick road is?
Yeah.
And he did it with such sincerity, and people would actually try and engage him and figure out where the yellow brick road was.
Oh, really?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
So that kind of an influence, and with my military influence, and then deciding to go into a business, once I was in the mine in Thompson, my wife and I, we decided we needed to make some more money. We had more kids coming.
Sure.
And we needed some additional money. So we both had some cleaning experience from a company that we both worked for back when we were very young. And it was more of a part-time thing. But the training we got was from a cutting-edge company at the time. And so it was just a natural, let's go in the cleaning business. And we did. We started it in Thompson. And Thompson at the time was under a lot of pressure. You know, there was a lot of cutbacks.
In the 80s, we would have had the double inflation, recession, the whole thing. Sure.
Yes. People were walking into the banks and giving their keys to their house. And
sure, lots of people did in that part of the 80s.
They did. And so we moved out of Thompson, came to Winnipeg, and we just carried on with the cleaning company. I did go to work for another company, but we had that cleaning company always in our minds, and we were going to build it and make it into something. And it finally did. It fed five kids. It put a roof over our head.
Yeah.
It put some of our kids through private school.
Yeah.
Much to their disdain.
It sounds like my kids sometimes.
Yeah. But you know, it was just it was all these stepping stones led one to the next to the next. And they all have played in. Even today, I was having a conversation in the airport yesterday with somebody, former soldier, and we got talking about how being in the military has just stayed with us for all of our lives.
It's amazing how you can have those life experiences that once it's part of you, it's always part of you.
Yes.
I often say that. I worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers for 4 years. And I don't know I guess it's okay to say the name, but it's a very interesting thing because within my profession, like that's a very, I don't know if we call it noble or servitude or what you call it, but it stays with you for the rest of your life.
It does.
Right? It's just like working for the railway too. You know, it's the same type thing, right? If you spend enough time there, it's almost like it gets in your blood.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
And so you've been able to take that even further. Now, let's just sort of do a quick summary before our next section because of the business you're in, because that cleaning business sort of became another business later on. So what other kind of businesses did you get into?
Well, I was approached by a friend who knew of somebody who was getting out of the food business, and he was running summer markets. So he said, hey, Brad, he says, this is something you should look at doing. And I kind of put him off. And finally, May comes around, April or May. And he says, Brad, you got to look at this. So I respect Paul, and I respected his opinion on the business, and I respected his view of me because he knew me fairly well.
Yeah.
And so I went and took a look at it, and 14 years we did it.
Yeah.
I bought this guy's equipment. I took over the routes that he had, and we incorporated that into what we were doing in other things, but it took our entire summers.
So it was a summer.
So for 14 years, our summers were dedicated to the fruit market.
So with that in mind, I think that's a good place to sort of, we'll take a short break and we'll come back and we'll talk about what it takes to dedicate 14 years to a seasonal business like the summer market, and then what were the experiences, the challenges, and the successes and challenges you've had, and how you had to overcome them. This is Richard Lanfer, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Brad Mastrovic. Just before the break, we were talking a little bit about your 14-year journey into the summer food market, and I was sort of shocked to hear that it was that seasonal, that it took up your summers, right? And, you know, so I suspect you probably took all a few rugrats along with you as you were doing your thing. What is the summer food market? Let's start there first.
It can take on different, you know, you can have a little roadside stand.
Yeah.
And sell a half a dozen different products, you know.
Okay, lots of people do that.
Mostly fruit.
Yeah, most people, a lot of people, yeah. Most people.
And
do
some guys do just corn.
Yeah.
They'll do corn during the corn season. We kind of took it a step further.
Yeah.
The first year was figuring it all out. And I had some experience with it way back in my childhood. My parents were involved in a roadside business, which incorporated a lot of produce and a lot of groceries. But that was in Southern Ontario. And that season is quite a bit longer than it is in Manitoba.
Yeah.
So essentially the Manitoba market for roadside summer food businesses is when school gets out. So
yeah.
Just prior to school getting out, which would be
middle of June.
Yeah.
Middle of June.
Middle, early. Sometimes you can start early June if the product is available.
Yeah.
And it goes to September.
Yeah.
Once kids go back to school, you're done.
It's done.
You know, the traffic has stopped. People aren't gone on holidays anymore. So these are some things that we tried to figure out. Early on, there were different towns that this fellow had set up that he would make day trips to.
Okay.
And we very quickly did the math and went, okay, we're selling this much fruit in that, and it's
location.
Costing this much to go to that location, we need to find a stationary location.
Okay.
And so we did. We were approached by a couple of people that first year, and we really didn't know where we were going to go. And we didn't know that really this is what we should do. So we tried one the second year, and it was the wrong location.
Okay.
And that's fine.
And they say, you know, location's everything.
Right? Everything, yeah. Is location, location, location.
Yeah.
So then we were approached by another location in Kenora, and we took a look at it, and it was probably the most unsightly place to locate your stand because it was up on top of a little bit of a rock cut. You know, you had to walk up about 8 or 10 feet, and it was probably a 5-foot elevation.
Okay.
So who puts a fruit stand on top of a little rock plateau? We did.
Okay.
And it turned out to be one of the hottest spots in town. So this went on for 14 years. And the people, when they see us, we've been out of it now for a long time.
Yeah.
Over a decade.
Yeah.
We still are invited back.
Oh, really?
That's how well we did there.
Yeah.
And it's not so much, yes, we worked very hard at it. We did a good job. Rosemary, my wife, she took care of that location. We had another location as well, but that was our primary. And it was just work, 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 work. And you're talking about getting up early in the morning, sourcing all your product, making sure you've got product, making sure that each location, in that case, we had two locations, one close to Winnipeg and one in Kenora, So, and it got to be where we were putting out 18 to 20 different items. Our grandchildren would come out and work with my wife in Kenora in the summertime. So it became, there was quite a bit of a family involvement. My son was heavily involved with us. And we couldn't have done it without him, really. I mean, the whole effort that went on. And I guess the thing about it was it came time to say, we've done it.
Yeah, right? Enough's enough.
And that's why 14 years. When you're slugging, you know what a crate of corn is like?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so when you're doing 200 to 250 crates of corn in and out of a refrigerator every 4 days, do the math.
Yeah, it's a lot of...
That's a lot of corn crates.
Yeah.
And Rosemary and I are both in our 50s now.
Yeah.
And we're going, these corn crates...
We don't want to do this too much.
That's right. These corn crates are getting heavier and heavier.
Well, that's the challenge with family-based businesses.
I
love the CAFE acronym, Canadian Affiliation of Family Enterprises, and supports family businesses. Sorry, a little call out for them. But, when you have these family-based businesses like this, I mean, it's all hands on deck.
It is.
It's very seasonal.
Yeah,
and it's amazing actually in Manitoba, in Winnipeg and Manitoba overall, how many seasonal businesses there are. I have clients I work with that in the wintertime is pretty dead.
Yeah.
But in the summertime, they do very similar things as yourself, maybe a different field, but they'll have roadside things going on. They'll be working with clients and everything. And then from like June to the end of September, it's like, you know,
go, go, go.
20-hour days,
yes.
Right? Sleep if you can, and away you go. Amazing, amazing.
You know, along the way, if it rains, you still go to work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the weather's going to be raining in Kenora. Well, so what?
Yeah, yeah.
I've got thousands of dollars worth of product in this truck, and it's got to get to Kenora.
Yeah, so you got to sell it.
So you got to go.
You got to go.
We would even set up the table in the rain and leave a honor box out on the table.
Yeah.
And people would stop, pick up what they needed. Drop their money in the honor box, and on the way they would go. I would say over the years that we did it, maybe there was 20 days like that we had to do that. But it was just too cold to be out there working, and the rain would be blowing in your face.
Mm.
So, I'm not a taskmaster, I guess, in that manner.
Yeah, you're reasonable.
Right. Yeah. In some manners, I might be a taskmaster.
Well, you got a lot of skill there. Now, you finished that business up about, that business expanded into another business.
Yes, it did. Manitoba is known for growing very good wild rice.
Okay.
And an opportunity came along where we could get into that field. We started selling it at the stand. We saw how well it was received by the public. And there was a fellow who had kind of established a little bit of a niche in northwestern Ontario with several locations. And I just saw the bigger picture. I saw where this could go across the country.
Hmm.
And so we just set about doing that. We took it on, and it was a big bite. You know, we're talking going from a few hundred pounds to 80,000 pounds in a month or two.
Yeah.
You know, so it was, that's all packaging, labeling. You have to source the material. You have to store it.
All the logistics. It's interesting because so far you've been addressing location of your business, logistics for your business, and the things that you manage to grow and make happen. When did you get out of those businesses?
I was diagnosed with the hepatitis C.
Yes.
And prior to being diagnosed, I knew there was something wrong.
Yes.
I would kind of burn out after about two or three months. You know, in the earlier years, it was maybe every 6 or 8 months, I would kind of hit the sofa.
So I think with that in mind, when we come back, we're going to talk about Hep C, what it is, how it impacted your life, and how it's changed everything for you. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Brad Mastrovic today. You know, Brad, just before the break, we were talking about your business, and then we talked about a diagnosis that really impacted you. It's called Hep C. It impacted your business life.
It did. I was in the early years, like I mentioned, I would run up against the wall, and it would just knock me down. I mean, it was like, I'm down and out for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah. How did you find out you had Hep C?
We were looking at going to a different insurance company.
Okay.
And the new insurance company required a blood test.
You did a blood test, yes.
And they test for liver enzymes.
Sure.
And when they saw that my liver enzymes were out of whack, they called me up on a Friday of a long weekend at about 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
Isn't that the way it is?
To tell me, we're sorry to let you know we've declined to...
Your insurance.
Your insurance. And, oh, by the way, you should see your doctor as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. So they knew something was up.
What a terrible thing to do on a Friday of a long weekend.
Now, how long ago was that?
15 years ago.
Okay, so it's a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Okay, so...
So I get the diagnosis, I find out what it is. My doctor didn't have a clue about hepatitis C, and kudos to her. She did some homework on it. She went to symposiums on it. She pulled up all my past files to look to see if there was any indication of what would maybe possibly indicate I had something. And the only thing that we really had was I kind of had this regular bouts with flu-like symptoms.
Yeah, that happens in a lot of cases.
Yeah. And this was going on for a long time, way before I was ever diagnosed. And I even had doctors tell me, you know, I'm sick of you coming in here. I think, you know, it's in your head.
Yeah.
Right? Or you're just trying to get out of work. And I went, you know, you're fired.
Yeah, fair enough.
But anyhow, we found out what it was. I finally got a really good doctor. I would like to say his name, if that's okay.
You should.
He's in the public forum, Dr. Panette. He's a general practitioner who at that time was running a clinic for hepatitis, and he got me on track for some treatment. I did two. Can I talk about the treatments?
Yeah.
It's early years, it was interferon and ribavirin.
Okay.
And you did your injection and you took pills. And along with that came a whole slew of side effects. During this period of time, I I'm involved in motorcycles.
Yeah.
So... during these times of treatment, motorcycles were very much a little bit of, not a very little bit, a lot of my therapy. They would help me get through the day sometimes.
Yeah, because you have a background in maintaining, yes, taking care of, selling motorcycles on
riding, decorating.
Yeah, decorating, sure. Real passion. So something that you focused in on other than your health issues.
Yes.
Right, really helped you.
And it really did help.
That's great advice, by the way.
It is. Yeah. Find something that you really enjoy if you're going through a tough time.
Yeah. And then just do that.
Whatever that is that makes a smile come on your body, go do it.
Yeah. That's great advice.
So this is what I did.
Yeah. Okay, so you went through treatments. You had a second treatment. Now, what interests me was...
I did four treatments.
You did four treatments. But I understand if correctly, not everything was working.
No.
Okay.
No, the first two, the ribavirin and the interferon, I did for approximately 18 weeks. And then after each one... they test you at about that 3 month mark, and when the results get back, they decide whether you're going to carry on or not. So I came back as a non-responder, which meant stop.
Yeah.
And so you went through all that mud
to face your mortality.
Yes, and I did that twice. And after the second time, I was pretty much done. I had thought, well, you know, I'm going to live as healthy a life as I can. I'm going to just carry on and get as much life as I could.
Yeah.
And then I got a call from Carolyn, who knows who she is. And she said, Brad, you got to come in. There's another pill that's been approved, and it's a booster pill. And it's called Incivic, and you take it for 12 weeks. I call it the chalk because that's exactly what it looks like
a chalk. Piece of chalk, half a chalk.
Right, yeah. And no coating.
Okay.
Right, so you get it down your throat or it's going to get stuck.
Yeah.
One in the morning, one at night, and then you got to, but the deal was I had to sign up for 46 weeks of interferon and ribavir.
Yeah.
And anybody who's ever done it will know it's worse than chemotherapy.
Yeah.
And I really wrestled with whether I was going to do this or not. And one day I was lamenting over this, and I saw the look on my wife's face, and that was the deciding factor. I thought, you know what, I should be doing this for me, but this time I did it for us.
Yeah.
And I went through it, got through to the end, target not found, and at the very last, I guess it was about 30 days after I had completed, target was found. And that was it. I was done.
So you were cured of hep C?
No. I was not. The target was found.
Okay.
So that meant I still had hep C.
Okay.
And I figured, oh my goodness, I'm not ever doing this again. So I just told him, don't call me. Unless you can use the word cure and you can use the word no side effects.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to hear. Well, then thank God for this. Somebody listened to a really good idea and took a different approach, targeted my genotype, which many of us had, genotype 1. And they came up with a different approach. Very minimal side effects. It's called Harvoni. I signed up to get it. I was put right to the top of the list because of all these previous misses. I don't call them failures. I just call them misses. And they got me to the top of the list. I did the program. And here I am 2 years after doing treatment, and I'm cured.
Awesome. Congratulations. You know, I don't know what to say. I almost feel like I should have just dedicated one whole show just to this story. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to invite you back, man. We're going to talk about just hep C.
All right.
How's that sound?
That sounds good. You know, because it is a very important
detailed
topic.
Yeah. And I know that we decided to do sort of a lifespan and everything along these lines. And yeah. I think there's a lot of listeners out there that could really deal with this. If you had one word of advice for our listeners, what might it be?
One word?
One word of advice.
You're asking me
for one word.
Oh, man. You know what? Just don't give up.
Don't give up.
Don't give up. Okay. Like, you know, it doesn't matter how dark the clouds are.
Don't give up.
And how much dust is being kicked up.
Yeah.
Just don't give up.
Don't give up. If somebody wanted to contact you, how could they go about doing that?
They could Instagram me at Brad Mastrovic.
And they can connect with you there.
Oh, right. Or they could use that bradmastrovic@gmail.com and keep it succinct.
There we go. I got to say, Brad, thank you for joining us. Listeners, thank you for joining the show today. Yes. I really appreciate for you hanging out with On Set for Success. And I want you to remember a few things. Well, first of all, if you got a thought, a question, or an idea, richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.
Yes.